start, yep. That was good.
Okay.
Thanks.
It's for posterity.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? So, people still look like they're moving around. Are you staying?
Huh?
Are you staying or running?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're staying. Good.
I'll
good.
Stay.
Okay.
Unless you're gonna kick me out.
No. As funny as it may seem to, teach the tiny groups, I'm gonna stick with because we are recording and uploading. Yeah. Do you mind cozying in? We'll kind of just like tighten up.
The others just don't know what they're missing. See, that's the...
Well, we talked a lot in staff about looking people up against God and new teachers that no one's ever known. Like, you're not going to get through that. But anyway, let's just... Hi. Let's just take a minute while there's still activity all around us. And just say who we are.
Yeah, these are people that just got initiated.
Oh, is that what's happening?
Yeah. That was a nice class.
Interesting. Are you joining us?
Yeah.
Oh, good. We're starting late, so.
To.
Great.
Come into your class. Do you want to stay there? I can just go like this and make it start cheap.
I do want to stay.
You can stay there, Sharif.
It's a lot softer,
yeah.
See.
Yeah. So, before we say the invocation, maybe let's just take a minute and go around and say who we are. So I'm Jahanara, or Wendy, if you're not oriented. And I live in southern New Mexico. And it's my first time teaching for the Unity Order. So it's really a big wow for me.
I'm Samuel Polite. I'm the regional rep and the representative. My wife and I are the center leaders here in Portland. Mm-hmm. We've been around for a while. That's not happening. Just ignore that.
There's no Bone Pond to Duncan.
Right? I'm Ariel. I'm local to Portland and been collaborating with other youths for youth-led activities here in town and also on a national level.
I'm Connie. I'm from Nova Scotia. And I was just initiated a couple months ago.
Last thing. Yeah, for tell.
Sharif Munauer from Tucson, Arizona. Chancellor of the Institute Universel, and I'm hard of hearing, so if you could speak up, that would enable me to hear you if you have anything you want me to hear.
I wonder if we should bring the circle that way.
We'll have to move many things.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mariam from Canada, too.
I'm Tao's name. I'm local and I belong to that one.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Well, our subject today is beauty, and as I entered the room, I heard like this amazing, beautiful sound, and I followed it, and it was Tarala playing Bach in the other room. Like, oh my god, no way to start a class on beauty. So, that was very apropos. Let's begin with the invocation. Are you joining us?
Yes.
Come on in. Maybe grab a seat here. We have a little spot to fill up. What's your name?
Basira.
Basira. Hi. Jahana.
Nice to be here.
Toward the one. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all of the illuminated souls, who form the environment of the Master, the Spirit of Kindness. I like to begin everything with breath. I feel like we can't take a first step without it. So let's just keep the eyes closed and sink in a little bit to our breath. And as soon as we bring awareness to it, we notice its rhythm and where we're arriving from. And maybe since we've been here a couple of days, it's already in rhythm, but often it can go a little deeper. And the way to bring that depth is to just extend the exhale longer. Send it all the way out in front. Push the last bits of air out. And at the end of that string is a little bit of longing that begins. When we feel that, then we can inhale and let the breath return. And when it does, let it be imagined as it really is, which is reaching everywhere all at once, every cell being oxygenated, the whole being, teeth, bone, organ, eyes, fingernails, heart, liver. Again, extending the breath, exhaling, seeing it travel, which it truly does. We can see it extend maybe down the corridor and out the door, but we can also see it move through the atmosphere and reach out back to the cosmos, past the rings of Saturn. The breath knows no boundaries. There's no inside and outside to the breath. When it comes back, though we most feel it on the lip, under our nose, on a level, a porous level, it's coming through everywhere. It doesn't know, it doesn't see matter. It's coming through every space, however small. And since our topic is beauty, we can let this breath, this infused, aware breath, help us in feeling receptive. We can suggest the world is nothing but beauty, but what then if we're not able to see it and sense it and feel it? So receptivity, each breath might take off a layer, taking off a layer of skin. Wash off a layer, dissolve. The heart might need to unfold. If we saw it as a flower, maybe it needs to, for being more receptive, open wider, more petals. And the senses, likewise, can open. What is that like? How do you open your ear more than it is already? Because maybe even feel the air on our skin that we're not noticing. There's a tenderness to receptivity. I often think of it in my mind as like if you're walking in the woods and then you realize that there's a deer. And it had been there for a while and so had you and you didn't notice each other. And it's so delicate. Its receptivity is so heightened. And then somebody makes a snap on a twig. And then everybody's aware. Let's deepen this further still with a Sufi practice, breath practice. If you let the eyes open, we'll take our right hand and just fold the middle of pointer fingers down. And what this leaves us with is this. kind of sometimes have to help them out. Yeah, it's awkward at first. And this is a tool, essentially. So shoulders relax, elbows relax. And this tool allows us to block one nostril, block both, and switch, right? So this is done many ways in yoga or in Sufism, slightly different versions. So let's begin with this ready in a tall seat so that we're a container for breath. Let your next exhale be long, push all the air out. And close your right nostril with the thumb and inhale through the left side. Belly soft, belly big. Close both sides and hold, keeping the skull rising from the top. Throat open. Lift the thumb and slowly exhale through the right, slowly, all the way to the very bottom. When the breath turns to the inhale, let it rise up. Soft belly like a balloon at the top, close both sides. Pause, throat is open, relaxed. Open the left side, exhale. Let it slowly empty out all the way to the very bottom and then turn, inhale. Skull reaches up to the sky, close both sides, hold. Lift the thumb, slowly exhale right to the very bottom. And inhale right. At the top, hold. Shoulders relaxed. Long neck, chin slightly tucked. Throat is open. Exhale left, slowly to the bottom. Inhale left. And for the last time, hold. Feel the sense of hovering, of spaciousness, of height. There's a balanced quality here. And when the breath needs to come now, just release the hand and let the exhale come. This is a wonderful balancing breath. I don't know if you can feel it. If you feel off kilter throughout the day, it can just bring you back to a centered feeling. But it also brings receptivity. So, beauty. Now we can talk about beauty.
Can you hear all right?
He can never.
Sort of.
It's built in.
I know.
I'm trying. Very trying.
Open our hearts towards thy beauty. So, as so many things in Sufism, we love to get mixed up in paradox. And then we're like, yeah, love to try to figure it out. That we'll be mixed up and we'll have to figure out this puzzle. Open our hearts toward thy beauty. Sufism is a, well, one, it implies that beauty's already there. And something on our end has to be done. By beauty do we worship. So beauty causes a sense of balance, worship. And right after that sentence is, to thee do we give willing surrender. There it is. By beauty do we worship, to thee do we give willing surrender. Beauty for the Sufi is a path, a way. If we just put out what the soul wants, what the soul loves, what the soul knows, like a bird feeder of beauty, song, scent, beautiful qualities. The ego really has nothing to support itself. It's like its nourishment went away. There's nothing it wants. So this is how it's a path, because it just sort of, you know, you can't bully it and you can't fight it. Whatever you throw against the ego, it'll just throw back at you. if you just take away everything that it's interested in, there is space only for what remains is the soul. And then, interestingly enough, on this path, by doing that, we become an expression of beauty. So we're collecting beauty, we're gathering beauty, we're letting everything that isn't beautiful subside, and we become more beautiful by this process. And at the same time, everything starts to look more beautiful, and you wonder how anything wasn't beautiful before, but really nothing out there has changed. And then that causes a natural desire to bow, to worship. So it's like a snake eating its tail. It's our path. It transforms us. We become beauty. We then need to worship it and then realize that the beauty we're worshiping is ourselves, because we become beautiful in the process of being collectors of beauty. So there's the sort of confusion, like wonderful confusion. And this interesting game leads us to our life's purpose, fulfillment of our life's purpose, which is the transformation of the one in matter to itself, which has only ever been beauty. You could say we become the object of worship, and we say in Sufism there is only one object of worship, which is beauty. So just peppering the field of beauty, we can have an interesting moment in just asking, what's not beauty? So we're starting off in the realm where some things seem beautiful to us and some things not quite. Well, we can say the ego, what is done in the absence of remembering the one, the breath that is the forgotten breath, the breath that we forget is provided, a gift from the one we love. It's the things we do without remembrance that in matter become inharmonious or cause disharmony. What we make or do unconsciously. When I was living in New York City, I was very interested in the piles of trash all over the streets of New York that were at the time very big. And sometimes there'd be a strike and there would be like corridors of trash bags that you'd walk through. And I would look at these and think, people worked really, really hard to buy the stuff in these bags. And then in no time at all, there, everything that was bought is on the curb. And I wondered why, like, how did the stuff get so valueless? And it occurred to me that things aren't beautiful, but in this case, the life preserved in the making of a thing, or the contrary, the life disturbed in the making of a thing, is where beauty lies. So, for example, today's modern goods, unlike 100 years ago, are not handmade and given 3 generations. Here's the wooden box that my grandmother's grandmother made, and it's a treasure. It's imbibed with stories. It's like a record player. And these are the things we treasure. It's connected and animated essentially by life, a thread of livingness. So it's not, again, it's not the thing, but what the thing represents. And I realized the things in the trash, and then I started going through the bags of trash. What's in these bags of trash, and why are we doing it? And it was like perfectly good clothing, designer clothing, cashmere sweaters, you know, still working electric pianos, electronics, I mean, you name it. I could, not only could I, but did I start a business selling the things, because these are not dead things, you know, this can't go to the landfill. But I think we push them to the curb because psychologically, subconsciously, we know that there are stories in these things. The story is a story of mistreatment of other human beings, pillaging of resources, disharmony, And so we get them home and we think that we're feeling something, but then we immediately see that the feeling of these objects is dead and they don't give us any joy whatsoever, and we can't wait to get them out to the curb. So what they represent in Sufi terms is where the ego stood in front of the light, where what we made was without the breath of Allah, was without the One, where we fractured and separated and forgot that the livingness is the body of God. We just sort of went rogue. So what's not beauty? Well, it points to a practice which is, you know, at some point in a Sufi life, la ilaha illallah is done the other way. Not, no, this is not the One, the real. The One comes through here. But yes, this is the real. This is the One too. And so is this, and so is this, and so is this, and so is this. Everything. Because essentially, at the same time, everything is the One, an expression, a reflection of the One. So we're back in that confusing, paradoxical swing. The word, I was interested to discover the word nirvana in translation means no difference. Mm-hmm. So when there's no difference, I guess the implied question is between what, and the implied answer would be between everything, then we're enlightened. So at some point we have to turn and say, la ilaha, yes, and this too, and this too, and this too, and this too. I have a story to share to help convey that thought from Murshid's life. I was lucky enough to, my friend Amin is finishing a movie on Murshid's life right now, so I asked him for the story, and in like 3 seconds, here it is, from the script. So, Murshid was in Secunderabad, India, and he wanted to meet with Nizam. I'm going to read as he wrote it. Anayat settled into a cottage rented from a Secunderabad Parsi family and made new friends, whom he told that he wished to meet and sing for the Nizam. And as it was told to me, which is not in here, this was really important to him. There was something bound up in this connection with his being, Nizam. So the family laughed and said that to see Allah would be more possible than to see the Nizam. To meet the Nizam, not possible. So after two or three people, this is in the words of Murshid, after two or three people had said the same thing, I did not ask any others. But my determination and the force of my desire was such that I felt I must either succeed or die. So I went home and I sat down quietly to tell him when there was no one around to listen. I felt I could not tell anyone else about it. So the nights I sat down with my feelings attached to heavenly things and to God, and I closed my eyes. At that time, I did not yet know what meditation or concentration was. I was young, a musician. So I just sat quiet and I thought of him, who is the creator, the sustainer, and the one who grants all desires. As Christ had said, if you desire from your heavenly Father, pray for it. He will not give you a stone. So Anayat filled his days writing and tutoring, and his evenings playing music, and he kept vigil through most of the nights for this meeting with Nizam. He was finishing his book, and one day, him and a friend were walking and saw a crowd gathered on the side of a road, and they were surrounding a female Sufi saint, an old woman. Her name is Hazrat Babajan, a rare woman mystic who was trained by the Sufis and followed no particular path. There's photos of her online, you can actually see her. Anyway, the two men went closer. The Sufi mystic woman was eating, and she spit the food in her hand and offered it to Murshid from her mouth. His friend encouraged him and said, this is a great blessing. And he took the food, and she said to him, your wish will be fulfilled this day. And later that day, Anayat was hailed by the court physician whose children he tutored. And the doctor said the court was moving and there was a chance to meet Nizam. And so it was. So what is not beauty? What do you think Marshall saw, felt, experienced when he took the food from this woman's mouth? In the eyes of the one, it was a blessing, a gift. He was able to see that, even in his young self.
Isn't the kind of one aspect of that story, though, the putting your full faith in that which you desire? So it's not just a wishful act, but it's really saying, I'll do what it takes. And in that case was, you know, a chewed up piece of food, right? Which is not easy. I'm sure that had to have been kind of a challenge to kind of say, well, I'll eat that. And but, you know,
faith.
Absolutely.
It's coming out to meet.
Yeah.
The one.
But I mean, that's a really great question, you know, for all of us in terms of our desires. How strongly do we desire that? Enough to, you know, so like the wasted trash is maybe not very much, but the one that's cherished is the one that's held on to.
And Laila, yes, this too is you, beloved. This too is too, yes. Instead of no. So then what is beauty? We say the absence of self, which leaves behind the beauty that already is. Luckily, we have a one in ourselves that knows the answer. We have a soul, which is all-knowing on the subject of beauty, and we have an expert within. And we know, as we say in Sufism, we become like the one we seek. This is how we look for God. We become like the one we seek, and the one we seek then sees nirvana, no difference between its body and our body. It's like becoming a vessel, spacious, beautiful. So there's no difference, dissolving boundaries. There's a lovely quote, "You are nothing but a mirror in which beauty is reflected. Beauty and its reflection are from one source, treasure and treasure house." So if we have this expert, you know, what can this expert actually tell us about this quest for beauty? It tells us that it's simple and sweet. It's not complicated. One does not create itself to be unknown. If it can't be understood, it's probably the stuff we made, man-made. And if it's simple, that's a clue. The soul knows this. It knows the doorways are beauty, scent, our senses, beautiful music, beautiful disposition, beautiful manner. Acts of kindness. And everyone recognizes beauty, you know, even though we have our own sensibility around it. When beauty appears, it's sort of undeniable. No one's going to throw, you know, up their hand and say, "Eh, that rose, that's an ugly rose." We know. It's the common sense. It is our common sense. Thanks for being patient. Oh, my notes. We might wind up in a very interesting conversation about like Saturn, if I don't keep myself. So we could say that our lives, what we're trying to do is become ensouled, and then also ensoul the world. And because we are embodied, we have, you know, these are our doorways, our senses, our sense of smell, our hearing, our physical hands, our heart, our... So one of the wonderful practices in Sufism is tuning those senses, learning to make them more operative. So I thought I would, for our gathering, use sound and invite us to close the eyes. So whenever we close one sense, another sense gets very heightened. And again, just return to the swing of your breath. We might consider on the swing of the breath the phrase, open our hearts towards thy being. And let your ears open wider. You could maybe imagine that you turn into one large ear. And begin to send it out and see all the things you hear that you didn't notice. Like layers in an onion, past the domain of a sound you can find is yet another. We can ultimately not know anything that we have not loved. We must love something to know it. So even though this is sound, it's our ears, we can send with it, with our widening range, desire, a wish to know. Let me hear more. And consider for a moment, this is the first day of these years, how precious it would be to hear for the first time. How incredible. We can never go back to that time. We can never remember that. But it must have been unbelievable. So I'm going to play a song just to extend this contemplation into.
Ave Maria.
almost always, if I close out everything else and just listen, just see, just smell, with the removal of all else for that moment, almost always, I find myself crying. If we really hear, if we really see, if we really touch, it's communion, it's past a sense, and really essentially becomes a door. So beauty as can also be, making beauty practical, it can also be a barometer. I know we've all had days where you wake up and everything really seems to be utterly lacking beauty. Like, what happened to this world? Sufis are great at having contemplative phrases that, like, you can chew on for 40 years. Like, just a sentence that just never runs out, like gum, forever gum from Willy Wonka. This gum is never going to die. So one of them is, all like is knowledge, and all dislike ignorance. I think we should take boredom out of the vocabulary. I want to vote for this, like, as a world. Because really, a meditator is never bored. And all, just take this sentence, you know, this one alone. This is a life. All dislike is ignorance, and all like knowledge. It's impossible to be with a contemplative phrase like that in your pocket. It makes every moment alive. What am I saying no to? What have I closed my heart to and said, not here? Because that's where the absence of beauty is pointing us to say, what do I have to bring here to say yes? The yes, and this too, and this too. There's a lovely quote. The world is a reflection, the heart a mirror. Did I read this already? I'll read it 100 times. Polish the mirror so that in this life you may see a glimpse of heaven. The world is a reflection, the heart a mirror. Polish this mirror. This is yes and this too. Yes, yes. So that in this life you may experience a glimpse of heaven. The wonderful thing is, the practice leads to happiness. But essentially, the globe of the heart, there's a quality of clarity, and with that, expansion. What else can I fit in here? Right? How much fits in here? And the breath is a wonderful way to see that the within is as big as the without. We get these moments where we can experience that really there's no within and out. It's in vastness on both sides of this thing we call ourselves. So what else can I say yes to? How much can I fit in here? And we have a wonderful living example. Take Mother Teresa. How big is Mother Teresa's heart? What doesn't fit in this tiny little woman who's essentially looking at some of the worst horrors in the shape of a human being and saying, yes, this too, and yes, this, and yes, this. And she's this big, and yet she's infinitely large. Well, I have so many crossing outs. This is where Pazia teaches exactly what I was going to teach the day before, like 3 times. In Sufism, we also have the 99 beautiful names, right? The beautiful names of Allah, the beautiful names of God. And these names sit at a threshold between the immediacy of form and our lives, where everything's very, like, ouchy and felt and dualistic, it's good, bad, yes, no, on, off, hot, cold. The qualities take us away from this space where everything's so immediate, and help us see beauty on another level, which is to zoom out from body and mind to heart and soul, and get, like Mother Teresa, an expansion, an expansive view. So we'll take this in meditatively and begin with an image. So I loved when Pirzia today, or yesterday, last night, said, what you imagine is real. It's disembodied light, but it's real, and even more so to the degree you can imagine it. So conjure an image, something beautiful. It could be like a bird, a mother bird feeding baby birds, or picture a brook and the light radiating off it. Something you just think is beautiful. It could be a rose petal. It could be a scene with people. You can watch a gardener from a hill. But make it really ornate. Visualize it, add detail, brighten the colors. Is there a fragrance, a perfume? Is there a sound? Continue to be the artist with this image for a moment and add more and more realness. Depth, brightness, bring more senses in. Remember, we cannot know what we don't love, so bring your heart in. And knowing now that we can sort of modify our filters and move from level to level, mind to body to heart to soul, sit back and let the image blur from distance. Take a step back. Let the filter be fuzzy. And as the image slips, look for the overarching theme or quality. So a mountain may have a quality of durability, of substance, of patience. The rose petal may have the quality of tenderness. You can say of the mother bird feeding the baby birds that behind that is not the mother, but motherhood, equality. From this view, we just touch into the field, the level of the 99 names, the qualities that become manifest and are inherent in a world of beauty. And in life, we can follow that same path, that same movement of stepping back. We don't have to do it, you know, in meditation. We can do it as a practice. And the effect is a wonder world, a world of beauty. So it's a salve and a practice. And maybe even if we really touch deeply into this, we can get the last piece, which is a sense of awe and wonder, the feeling that makes you wish to bow. close this with a quote. If love manifests itself within you, know its origin is in beauty. You are nothing but a mirror in which beauty is reflected. Beauty and its reflection are from one source. It is both treasure and treasure house. I lived in a tiny town and we had a llama. So he's like our neighbor and our friend and our llama. And he likes to say, when people share good news, something good happened in my practice, every note become a mantra. You know, this is his world. Like, he's coming out of a song to have a chat with us. When did you ever leave a zikr and feel sung by it for a while? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When the boundaries dissolve. So, for the life of a Sufi, we're just like so blessed. Our path is to go out into a wonder world and gather beautiful things. How much can I find? What else? This too, and yes, and this, and this. But in practicality, then how do we meet those moments where we bump into ugliness and we can't find a way to fit it in our heart, in our world? Well, a couple of things, you know. We can say and remember that it's hard to be fully awake. It's hard to see everything as it is. It leads to responsibility. It's a burden. It's a lot to bear. There's strength in it too, but not everybody's ready for every single dimension of sight. So we can meet it beautifully and say ignorance is a shield for that which we're not yet ready to face. And let the sleeping sleep. Some people need a nap. And time will eventually bring forward all the challenges to open each heart. But another thing, because once we put something on the globe of the heart, we're then blocked from this light. So how do we move through the world and all these situations that say, not here, and then not have it land in our heart and become our own obstruction? So a practice that I love to go to for that is, have you ever heard Yashafik, Yarafik, Majinmin, Kulidik? Anyone know this? Yeah. This practice seems to have gone into obscurity. No one seems to know it. It came from Saluk, and Pierzia taught it once. It's Yashafik, Yarafik, Majinmin, Kulidik. And the meaning of it is, O sympathetic one, O friend, save me from narrowness. It's like a life raft. And it's a turn and a reminder. So I meet with something and I feel my heart close and I can't put it there. I can't let that dust form because then my own illumination is, I'm extinguishing. Beauty, 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 but I can't find it. So the prayer, really it's a prayer, oh, sympathetic one, oh, friend, save me from narrowness. And then we zoom out. It's like coming back out, like to the qualities, which are so vast and broad. So we can blur our lens, and maybe we can't, in the details, see the beauty. But if we step back, we can see something larger. Patience, strength, even if it's unnecessary strength, right? How many people are creating ugliness with just too much force, too much power? But, you know, we can step back and tap into the broad theme. So let's try it. I'll say the words a few times and we can just kind of jump in as it feels right. So it's Yashafik, Yarafik, Najinimin, Kuridi. Oh, sympathetic friend, save me from narrowness. Yashafik, Yarafik, Najinimin, Kulidik.
I can't hear.
Najinimin, Kulidik.
I think you have to go through that one. Just the second phrase, I think.
Yeah.
For everyone to hear.
Yashafik, Yarafik. Najinimin Kulidik. Najinimin Kulidik. Kulidik. Yashafik. Yarafik. Najinimin Kulidik. Yashafik. Ya Rafik, Najinimin Kulidik. Ya Shafik, you'll never get rid of it once you got it. Ya Rafik, Najinimin Kulidik. Ya Shafik, Ya Rafik, Najinimin Kulidik. Ya Shafik, Ya Rafik, Najinimin Kulidik. Ya Shafik, Ya Rafik, Najinimin Kulidik. Remember the meaning as you say it. Ya Shafik, O sympathetic friend, Ya Rafik. Najinimin, save me from narrowness. Kulidik. Yashafik. Yarafik. Najinimin. Kulidik. Yashafik. Yarafik. Najinimin. Kulidik. Yashafik. Yarafik. Najinimin. Kulidik.
Is it mean or mean?
Mean. Ya Shafik. Ya Rafik. Najinimin. Kulidik. Ya Shafik. Ya Rafik. Najinimin. You know, with these practices, there's a terrific story about getting them right. A little tiny story. So, I'm probably going to tell it wrong, but there's a guy on a boat, and there's another guy walking. I think it might have been Moses. Walking by, and the guy on the boat's praying, just saying it all wrong, getting everything wrong. So the guy on the shore, you're getting it wrong. You know, it's like this. And the guy on the boat's like, what? And just goes back and forth and back and forth. Get it wrong. What? And then the guy on the boat just steps off the boat and walks across the water to the shore. He's like, what? It's okay to get it wrong.
I thought about a saying of Mirshit's, how did I rise above narrowness? Mm. My own wall started to hurt my elbows.
Oh. Mm-mm. Yeah, when we're comfortable in a sphere this big, that's our world that we can operate in happily and with ease. It's really a terrible thing. But you know, the only way to expand the circle is to step out into absolute discomfort and then normalize it and say yes, this too. And then once you're comfortable in this other little thing, you just have to again step right out the edge and so on. And because God's heart is infinitely large. Nothing doesn't fit. So we become like the one we seek.
I thought of another saying.
Please.
Don't let your remedy become your malady.
Mm. 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 Oh, I've been chewing that for a long time. Mm. Mirshad said, there will come 1,000 persons who will look at the piece of art, but there will be perhaps one among the 1,000 who really understands the soul of the artist, who understands the beauty of the art, who understands what is behind it. And that person who is the real friend of the artists because he knows the soul of the artist is the believer of God. When the believer of God has opened his heart, then the believer of God is beginning to see the beauty of creation and to communicate with beauty. And then he comes to know the artist who is behind the beauty. I'll read it again, there's a typo. There will come 1,000 persons who will look at the piece of art, but there will be perhaps one among the 1,000 who really understands the soul of the artist, who understands the beauty of the art, who understands what is behind it. And that person is the real friend of the artists, because he knows the soul of the artist is the believer of God. When the believer of God has opened his heart, then the believer of God is beginning to see the beauty of creation and to communicate with beauty. And then he comes to know the artist who is behind beauty. I thought I would ask us to talk about beauty, but I didn't form a question. I wanted to see if one was kind of lingering around about beauty. One of the things I considered for a question was, what standard are you holding the world up to? What beauty when you're disappointed? When the world lets you down, what world do you know of that it failed to be?
Do you want our answers to that?
Well, if you have one, we can just sit on it a minute, or if there's something there, please, yeah.
For me, it's when I perceive there's been an inability and I'm looking at it on the part of the person, if I'm one-on-one with someone and the person seems to be all alone, absorbed in their own conversation, dialogue, and there is no room for listening. Or there is a lack of my perception of sensitivity coming from the other person. And feeling like I'm on the outside observing. And wishing I could join that person and not feeling that there is an entryway anywhere. So I don't know that I would use the word lack of beauty in a situation like that, but I guess I perceive it as something that's walled off. That there's no way to have a receptive union with another myself.
Could you say, don't let me put words in your mouth, please, but could you say, your God is available?
And I have to, you know, it's a very good question because I have to own my inability to see beauty. So who's the one that's walled off and who's the one that's isolated? So yeah, that's my requirement that blocks my own ability to see beauty.
I relate to that one a lot. Another one that came to me is like, well, like here at this gathering, and there's something similar on the island that I live on, where I live, it's, there's a lot of small organic farms. You can have happy meat locally. There's farm, everyone has a farm stand or eggs. Like, there's a beautiful Saturday market all year long. A lot of neat community events, different spiritualities, spas. It's kind of like a little heaven. So beautiful. Or here, there's all these beautiful people and all these beautiful teachings. For me, the tricky part is around diversity. So it's like, this is so beautiful and so white, right? And so I feel that it's like hard for me to fully sink in and embrace the beauty because it feels like it's like a bubble of beauty that's maybe like not attracting or not in some way accessible to a diversity of beauty. And so I have this rub. I'm like, I feel this is so beautiful, and I feel it's missing something that makes it less beautiful because it doesn't match the larger context in some way. It's like a bubble in the actual context. So I don't want to, but then I don't want to become like hating or seeing the ugly in this, right? So that's my challenge.
So your God has every form. Is, do you hear in both the invitation for action? Yeah.
I tend to, I think if I am somewhat objective, when I experience things of beauty, it's usually when I'm out of context of my own perception. It's like in a state of wonder and awe, and you know, it's not me. You know, I'm an observer, but I'm not. And then at the times when I'm really not experiencing that, it's because I think I have a preconceived notion of what it's supposed to be. So I'm busy trying to fit it into a block, and I miss the opportunities. And then, you know, all this regret and remorse and all of this stuff comes in because, you know, I'm just not in that sense of reverie. I know that I need to get there, but I can't, right? And then it's like this house of cards kind of seems to collapse on itself, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not until I can get back into that state for whatever the experience is that I'm then be able to get, you know, to enjoy it better. Or it's an interesting thing because it's not, we tend to want to think of it as something creative that I can create, but it's really just participating, not creating in that willful way.
I'd like to say I experience beauty much more readily when I'm stoned. I notice lots of things I wouldn't notice otherwise.
Heightened
and I remember
senses.
Peter Vilayat once said, you know, if you were walking along in nature and you came across a beer can and you had never seen one and you had no idea what it was, you would pick it up and think it was an incredibly beautiful object.
Shiny.
Right, absolutely, mm-hmm. Wonderful. So for me, the most beautiful thing that human beings do is music. Mm-hmm. And so I always have my earphones ready and on my phone and my iPod, I have tons of just glorious, wonderful music. And even when I'm walking in nature, I tend to listen to the music rather than listen for what's in nature, although I do very well. If I'm by flowing water, I listen very carefully because the sounds are so diverse and wonderful and inspiring. Murshid said once that we tend to think of nature as inspiring, but nature is not actually inspiring. It's just when you are in nature, you can be quiet enough to access the inspiration that comes from within.
I have found that pack rats are exceptional collectors of beauty. I run in the desert and I've become tuned to pack rats' little nests, and they love shiny objects. So, you know, if you like lose your watch in, you know, the Chihuahuan desert, you know, the way to find it is to go look for pack rat nests, because it'll be in there. Like, they just find glistening things and they shove it all in their nests. In that question that we just sat with for a moment of when you're disappointed in life, what ideal had you held up that it failed to meet? I would not like to leave you without the something to consider about the question. In some way, that helps us point to what is our image of God. Because often that ideal we're holding up is something that has never been. It's a world that's never yet existed. It's what we believe, and we just came in with it. But each one is unique. Your projection of what could be is, you know, is not mine. And when we look at it that way, what have I been holding you to get up to? We realize often that the missing thing, where it's inharmonious, is uniquely dialed to who we are. That's what we're here for. You, like, specifically. But I'm specifically here for you. This, you know, it's like a laser beam that points right in and says, here's something to do, and it's yours. Because it's your ideal. No one else has that ideal that they're comparing the world to. It's personal. So it's a nice moment to have followed the moment of disappointment. Which is, what am I comparing this to?
Thank you.
Mm, yeah.
Reflective practice.
I like to think of these as little tools in like a pocket. Mm-hmm. Yeah. maybe we'll close with Nayaz, yeah? Thank you all for coming. It's not easy going up against the superstars. I appreciate it. Beloved Lord,
Almighty God, through the rays of the sun, through the waves of the air, through the all-pervading life in space, purify and revive us, and we pray, heal our bodies, hearts, and souls.
He got it.
Wahoo! Thank you. My pleasure.